God may have great things planned for us, and we may feel impatient for Him to get on and fulfill His purposes for us. But maybe He's waiting for us to learn certain lessons.
You've joined us for Mission 66, bringing the Bible to life, book by book and chapter by chapter. This program is brought to you by TWR in partnership with the Bible teaching ministry of Dr. Luis Seau. John Matthews and Esther Sisulu are guiding us through the book of Numbers. You can follow along with your downloadable study guide at mission66.org. Now, here's Esther to get us started.
It's time for us to delve into our Bible study so that we can know what's in each of those 66 books of the Bible and put them into practice. You know, friend, God knows best, and we all benefit when we order our lives according to the principles of God's Word. Well, right now we are on the series of studies in the book of Numbers, and I know that there's lots for us to learn today. Well, with over 8 billion people in the world, it's so comforting to know that as far as God is concerned, we're not lost in the crowd. God knows those whose hearts belong to Him, and He keeps track of each and every one of us with guidance and with provision. And we'll also find that we're not all alone. In fact, there are millions that are just like us, whose God is the Lord and who hold the testimony of Jesus Christ. So here is our teacher, John Matthews, who will focus on chapter 26 today with the theme, Headcount.
Esther, thank you so much, and a very warm welcome to this latest episode of Mission 66. It's great to be with you, and we're here now currently journeying through the Old Testament book of Numbers. Now, this is a book that describes the movements of the children of Israel after they'd left Egypt and were being prepared by God to enter the land of Canaan, which had been promised to the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But they were delayed from reaching that destination by nearly 40 years, forced to wander in the wilderness. Why? Well, because of unbelief. But now this new generation has come up, and they finally reach the Jordan River, right across from their very first conquest, which will be Jericho. And they were going to have to engage in some warfare during this period of occupying Canaan. And here, chapter 26 is going to tell us about a second census that was commanded by God. As we learned in the beginning of the book of Numbers, there was a first census that was taken at Mount Sinai, and that counted more than 600,000 men among that Israelite company. That didn't include the Levites. They were assistants to the priests. But after the wandering period in the wilderness, a whole new generation had arisen, and so another headcount was necessary. And so the entire chapter 26 is devoted to that second census. Some might consider this a bit boring, but there are things and important things to be learned from the chapter. So let's read it. After the plague, referring to the plague that came up as a result of Israel's moral failure at Baal Peor, the Lord said to Moses and to Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest, "Take a census of all the congregation of the people of Israel, from 20 years old and upwards, by their fathers' houses, all in Israel who are able to go to war." And Moses and Eleazar the priest spoke with them in the plains of Moab by the Jordan at Jericho, saying, "Take a census of the people from 20 years old and up, as the Lord commanded Moses." And the people of Israel who came out of the land of Egypt were Reuben, the firstborn of Israel, the sons of Reuben, of Hanok, the clan of the Hanukites, of Palu, the clan of the Paluites, of Hezron, the clan of the Hezronites, of Carmi, the clan of the Carmites. These are the clans of the Reubenites, and those listed were 43,730. And the sons of Palu, Eliab. The sons of Eliab, Namuel, Dathan, and Abiram. These are the Dathan and Abiram, chosen from the congregation who contended against Moses and Aaron in the company of Korah, when they contended against the Lord, and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed them up together with Korah, when the company died, when the fire devoured 250 men, and they became a warning. But the sons of Korah did not die. That's interesting, isn't it? Because Korah's sons, probably too young to understand what had gone on with their father's rebellion, or maybe they were too respectful of God's authority to join the revolt. Well, they were spared. And then the chapter goes on, it lists more of the tribe. So we're going to skip down to verse 19 that says, the sons of Judah were Ur and Onan, and Ur and Onan died in the land of Canaan. And the sons of Judah, according to their clans, were of Shelah, the clan of the Shelonites, of Perez, the clan of the Perizzites, of Zerah, the clan of the Zerahites. And the sons of Perez were of Hezron, the clan of the Hezronites, of Hamul, the clan of the Hamulites. These are the clans of Judah as they were listed, 76,500. Now, the headcount continues as a matter of record down to verse 28. This is what verse 28 says. The sons of Joseph, according to their clans, Manasseh and Ephraim. The sons of Manasseh, of Machir, the clan of the Machirites. And Machir was the father of Gilead. Of Gilead, the clan of the Gileadites. These are the sons of Gilead, of Iazer, the clan of the Iazerites, of Helek, the clan of the Helekites, and of Azrael, the clan of the Azraelites, and of Shechem, the clan of the Shechemites, and of Shemida, the clan of the Shemidites, and of Hepher, the clan of the Hepherites. Now Zelophehad, the son of Hepher, had no sons but daughters. And the names of the daughters of Zelophehad were Mahla, Noah, Hogla, Milcah, and Tirzah. These are the clans of Manasseh, and they were listed as 52,700. Now we'll hear more about the four daughters of Zelophehad in our next episode. But it goes on in verse 35 to say, these are the sons of Ephraim, according to their clans, of Juthalah, the clan of the Juthalites, of Becher, the clan of the Becherites, of Tahan, the clan of the Tahanites. And these are the sons of Shuthalah, of Aaron, the clan of the Aaronites. And these are the clans of the sons of Ephraim, as they were listed, 32,500. These are the sons of Joseph, according to their clans. And it goes on to list the descendants of each of Jacob's sons, their Benjamin and his clans, the sons of Dan according to their clans, the sons of Asher according to their clans, the sons of Naphtali according to their clans. And finally, in verse 51, we get a total count, 601,730. That is the total headcount of the available warriors of Israel. And that doesn't include women and children, and neither does it count the tribe of Levi. Now, it's possible then that the total population was more than 2 million. This count came to about 2,000 people less than the first census in Numbers chapter 1, which had been 38 years previously. Why? Well, this was because during that time they were under judgment, condemned to wander in the wilderness for 40 years until every Israelite over the age of 20 who had left Egypt died. And that was due to their unbelief and their refusal to enter the promised land. That is, every Israelite except Caleb, Joshua, and Moses. Let that one just sink in for a moment. The entire nation migrated from one land to another. Then they lost their entire adult population. Yet they still managed to keep their identity, their purpose, and the direction under the leadership of this man, Moses. So it was always God's purpose to bring the people into the land, but they were delayed because of their unbelief. What a principle that is. It's still valid today. God may have great things planned for us. We, though, may get very impatient with him to fulfill his purpose for us. But maybe he's waiting for the work in us to move forward substantially, for us to learn certain lessons. And so I think we can speed up our outcome, our destiny, by cooperating with what God is trying to teach us. And that often looks like reliance on him, surrender to him, because he knows what is best for us. It's also interesting that from verse 52 on in this chapter, we begin to see the distribution of land by tribes, even before the land had actually been occupied. Verse 52, the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, among these the land shall be divided for inheritance according to the number of names. To a large tribe you shall give a large inheritance, and to a small tribe you shall give a small inheritance. Every tribe shall be given its inheritance in proportion to its list, but the land shall be divided by lot. According to the names of the tribes of their fathers, they shall inherit. Their inheritance shall be divided according to lot between the larger and the smaller. See, it also mentions the dividing up of the land, and this was carried out by the casting of lots. Even this process was directed and overseen by God. And as we approach the end of chapter 26, we also see a separate census taken of the tribe of Levi. They were the ones, of course, who served in the sanctuary of the tabernacle. They were responsible for all the worship that was carried out there, and they were effectively set apart in such a way that they had no inheritance of land. Their livelihood was to be the offerings of God's people. And this is why they were counted in a separate census. And that count is recorded in verses 57 to 62. And the total number of Levites of male gender was 23,000. And so chapter 26 is going to end here in the last few verses by saying, these were those listed by Moses and Eleazar the priest, who listed the people of Israel in the plains of Moab by the Jordan at Jericho. But among these there was not one of those listed by Moses and Aaron the priest, who had listed the people of Israel in the wilderness of Sinai. For the Lord had said of them, they shall die in the wilderness. Not one of them was left, except Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, and Joshua, the son of Nun. Isn't that incredible? All those who had complained about God and didn't believe the promise that they would conquer the land, well, they were prevented from entering and enjoying the land that had been promised by God for so long. And yet, the positive attitude of Joshua and Caleb won them the ability to live longer and indeed to enter and help conquer the promised land.
You're listening to Mission 66, where we study all 66 books of the Bible each day, one chapter at a time with our teacher, John Matthews. Now, I'm Esther, your host. And friend, did you know that there are over 2,350 verses in God's Word, the Bible, that specifically address the topic of money? Wow, that is quite significant. You know, King David says in 1 Chronicles chapter 29:11, for everything in heaven and earth is yours. Yours, Lord, is the kingdom. You are exalted as head over all. Wow, isn't that fascinating? That God already owns everything that we have, and yet he asks us to give. Now look, we know that he doesn't need the money, so there must be a much deeper meaning here. I think it's really a heart issue. Well, friend, would you let God speak to your heart today about becoming a financial partner with Mission 66? You know, we rely on the generosity of God's people to cover our costs. So can we count on you today to give generously? Whether that's a monthly or a one-time gift, your support will enable thousands of listeners across the world to continue listening to Mission 66 and understanding how they can also apply God's principles in their lives. So you can log on right now to mission66.org to give your gift. And thank you in advance, dear friends, for choosing to put God first with the resources He's already given you. So please visit mission66.org. All right, John, well, we are currently looking at Numbers chapter 26. And you know, it actually contains the counting of the Israelites before they head into the promised land. Now, why do you think that it was only the men that were counted? Because surely in this case, women and children were valued as well, right?
Well, Esther, you know, the purpose of the census was to gauge the military strength of the new younger generation so that all the people would know how many were on their side. They didn't count the Levites in the military census because they wouldn't be fighting. They would be ministering in the tabernacle full time, and so they were counted separately. So this had nothing to do with the value of women and children. We know how much they mattered to God, but when they were going up against a foe, they'd be able to know whether they were stronger or weaker militarily and maybe adjust strategies therein. And with God directing them, it seems that no two battles described in the Bible were fought the same way.
Okay, so let's go ahead and have a look at who the enemies were that the Israelites were about to face.
Well, you had the Canaanites, and we've learnt from what we've seen previously on Mission 66 that the Canaanite occupants of the land were not known for their virtue. They were involved in all kinds of idolatry and sexual immorality, and in many cases it was they who had attacked the Israelites. And so God had promised Abraham that he was going to displace them and give that good land to Abraham's descendants, assuming that they would continue to obey God. The tribes to be displaced made themselves enemies of Israel. It was the Moabites and the Midianites, for example, who tried to entice the Israelites into their way of life. Then you had the Edomites, the descendants of Esau, the brother of Jacob. And there was this constant enmity between the descendants of Jacob and the descendants of Esau. And of course, there were many other tribes, including the Philistines, a number of giants known as the sons of Anak, of which Goliath was one. So there were these battles, there were these groups of conflicting. So it was going to take some physical and numerical strength to conquer the land, but it would be done little by little.
All right, well, let's have a look at verse 55, because here God was telling the people to divide up the land even before they actually took possession of it. Of course, success was a foregone conclusion, but why do you think the division was made by casting lots?
Now, the Old Testament priests, for example, had as part of their vestment this special pocket in which were kept something called the Urim and Thummim. These were two shaped pieces. Now, we don't know all the details about them, but this Urim and Thummim were used by the priests when a question would arise on what Israel should do. Now, lots were cast after the Battle of Jericho to determine which of the men had taken spoil which they weren't supposed to, and the lot actually was accurate in determining that it was Achan. He admitted it after the lot pointed to him. Now, kings would ask the priests to consult this Urim and Thummim before any military campaign, the idea being that once God was invited to give input into the decision-making, then the people trusted that the lot would give an accurate answer.
Well, for our friends who've been following along in our Mission 66 episodes, John, they may have heard us discuss this casting of lots, but I'm going to ask the question again just for good measure. Should we practice this today? You know, for instance, asking God to give a correct answer and then draw straws or throw the dice? What do you think?
Well, you know, the early church actually used this method in the book of Acts after the disciple Judas betrayed the Lord and hung himself. The disciples felt that they should replace Judas so that there would be 12 apostles, and so the lot was cast. Now, we don't know which method precisely that they use, but it ended up with Matthias being chosen. And none of the New Testament books recommend the casting of lots, but neither do they forbid it. Look, ultimately, we submit all our decisions to God and ask Him to direct our steps. We're told to cast our anxiety on Him, for He cares for us, and that we should make decisions in our lives based on the principles found in the Bible.
All right, John, well, here's just one last question before we finish off our lesson today. Now, it says that the entire families of Dathan, Abiram, and Korah were swallowed up by the earth, right, when they contended with Moses. Yet it also says that the sons of Korah did not die. So how did they escape when the other families were in essence buried alive?
Well, one of the principles of the Bible is that everybody is each accountable for their own sin. So the son is not accountable for the sins of his father. And so the sons of Korah then were evidently not held accountable for their father's actions. And even though they were orphaned by what happened, by the divine judgment against their parents, they became part of a new generation that rose up in the place of those who doubted. So God did judge those who turned against Him in active rebellion, but He also purified His people, and He still had a purpose and a plan for Korah's line. God doesn't write lines of people off, generations of family off, because of just the actions of one or even a few. And we find out later that the prophet Samuel arose from the line of Korah. One group of Korah's descendants joined King David in various military exploits, becoming expert warriors. Some also, though, became musicians and great leaders in choral and orchestral music in the tabernacle. In fact, 11 of the Psalms are attributed to the sons of Korah. So we can believe the gospel even if our parents don't. We can still be the generation who points our family and our loved ones to Jesus and set a new eternal standard.
Oh, praise the Lord. This is such good news. You know, it's wonderful to know, John, that God qualifies the called. He doesn't call the qualified, at least. That's an expression I've heard quite often. Well, thank you so much for leading us through today's lesson. I think we discussed some very important points. So let's go ahead and summarize Numbers chapter 26.
Yeah, let's do that, Esther. And Numbers 26 talks almost exclusively, actually, about the second census or headcount that was taken here in Israel before they conquered the promised land. I believe it was for the purpose of showing the entire nation that they were not weakened by the fact that the entire older generation had died off, but this new generation had a strong enough military force for the coming conquest of Canaan. Remember that of all the spies that were sent out to check the land, only Joshua and Caleb were mentioned as those who believed that with God's help it could be done. None of those who doubted would be allowed to enter the promised land. But you have this whole new generation of vibrant youth who'd grown up in their place. And God was so confident of their success that He even began dividing up the land amongst the tribes before they had taken it. Now that is faith.
Well, that is faith indeed. Thank you so much, John, for today's lesson. And dear friend, we invite you to join us as we continue our study through Numbers next time here on Mission 66. But if you'd like to stay up to date with upcoming topics in our program, please visit us on Facebook. Simply type in Mission 66. Until next time, God bless you.
Has God used today's program in your life? Then you'll want to receive the free study guide that's waiting for you on our website. You can get it right away by downloading it at mission66.org. At mission66.org, you can also leave a comment or make a donation to help this listener-supported ministry. When you give, you're helping listeners experience solid Bible teaching in many languages in some of the most spiritually resistant places in the world. Thank you for helping at mission66.org. Mission 66 is a ministry of Transworld Radio.